Hello, this is your host Craig here with Mental Health Insights, and now I'm here today with Christina and Lauren. And I think what's wonderful is this was an episode that I hadn't really planned or intended on doing, but after meeting these two women, one of the things that they had in common was they both had recently moved here to the St. Louis area. And it just really struck me as us as therapists, we have certain, we have our background, we have certain insights as to what helps us whenever we have these big transitions. So I actually really became curious about this. So I want to welcome you, Lauren and Christina, to Hello. The show.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you so for having us.
So I guess one of the first questions I had for you guys is, especially with your guys' background, whenever you guys first known that you guys were going to be moving, what did you guys do?
Go ahead. Okay, this is Christina. So my situation was my husband's military. Mm-hmm. And so we knew for a while. So we moved in July, but we knew since about February. So what I started doing to prepare there, of course, spending as much time with my family as possible was so huge for me because I had never lived away from them. So,
So this is even a bigger transition in that regard.
Yeah. So it was tough, but spending time with them, of course, me and my husband kind of researched a lot about St. Louis. Mm-hmm. We're both pretty extroverts. So I know you mentioned some being introverted.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
For us, we knew we had to find social activities and places to just take our dogs and be out and meeting people. So we kind of prepared in that sense. I joined a lot of like Facebook groups, found events.
There's dog walking groups too.
Yeah.
Right? So if you go to like a meetup.
I was going to say there's meetup.com.
Meetup. Yeah. Because I think that my wife and I actually ended up doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've done some of those things. And this was prior to us even moving in July. So that kind of helped prepare us to actually be in St. Louis. And of course, in a little while, I can talk more about the actual transition.
Oh, yeah. How about for you, Lauren?
Kind of prepping and everything. So I guess I knew I was going to move eventually, but I didn't have a time frame because my significant other got the residency at, Washoe Barnes, and it's a huge hub here in St. Louis. And so I knew eventually I'd make it my way. We did long distance for a while. And so what I did is, honestly, organization, I'm really organized. So I was like, well, I know I'm going to need my licensure, and that has to be lined up first, even to start looking at anything. So I took a few steps back and I was like, well, let's do one thing at a time. And I slowed it down a little bit and I organized. It's like, I can't start looking at jobs or applying for jobs unless I'm licensed, and I get that all sorted out. So then I went to the websites, looked at all of the criteria, and I got all that sorted. I actually became licensed almost a year before I moved here. Because I didn't actually know the timing, but I was like, I have to have that as my foundation.
I think this is so interesting. So Christine's like, all right, the first thing I knew is like I had to get involved in different groups because I know that I needed that. And you're like, I needed to make sure that I planned and had all these different things lined up. So I can imagine both of you guys, like, both of you guys are on the computer, right? Mm-hmm. And you're on like, all right, what are these Facebook groups, or what are these things I'm going to look at? And you're like, all right, what are the requirements for me to transfer my license over or anything? Mm-hmm. So for those of you that don't know, for therapists and counselors, our license doesn't always transfer so smoothly from state to state because sometimes states have different requirements for that. So it actually becomes a really big headache for us. But that kind of even shows like even just a little bit of the differences between you two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of curious. I would wonder where the kind of average person would fall, because I'm hearing you guys say this and I'm like, I wouldn't do any of that. I'd just be like, oh man, this sucks. I got to move. I'm gonna start packing stuff up. Like, I wouldn't think that, like, oh, I should spend all the time with my family I have, because, like, for me, I think for me, every time that I've been far away from my family, it's been almost like out of sight, out of mind. Like, I don't forget that they exist, but that's just the way that my brain works, that works for me. That's like,
you're present to what you're doing.
That's a really positive spin on it. Or I'm like blind to everything else. So for you guys both preparing in your own way, I'm kind of wondering, like, what's like the nervous level like for you guys as you guys are kind of getting closer and closer to this? I know, Lauren, you said you didn't really know when this was going to happen for you too.
Right.
I feel like that'd be even, I don't know if that'd be scarier or not.
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, especially when you want to organize and plan and get things set, but it's not as anxiety provoking because then I already had a job and I was based in California and I've been there for 11 years. But on the family side, my whole family is based in Illinois. So actually, I didn't have to worry about any of that because I was moving closer. So like I've been without my family close for like 11 years. So I was actually excited about that because now it's much more doable to visit them regularly. But it was easier to not have a timeline because I already had a job out there. I was set out there, everything. So I actually had more freedom to do what I wanted to do on my own timetable. So it could adjust easily. So it actually caused less anxiety because if something needed to be delayed this timing or this timing, I could do it because there's no set time.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things you said too, there's also a certain amount of excitement that you had, like about the mood. Like where Christina, you're kind of in the opposite boat where it's like, I'm kind of leaving all this stuff that's really familiar to me.
Yeah. So my situation was a little, we had some control. So with the military, obviously we don't have control about where we go. Once they say you're going, right? But I had a job where I knew if we got stationed in St. Louis, I would be able to transfer pretty easily into the corporation. So I told my husband, put St. Louis on your list as number one. So that was the control I took of it, right? Was telling him, put it on your list because I know I can get a job. And so sure enough, by April, I had a job up here in St. Louis that I was already doing remotely until July. And so that kind of alleviated a lot of the stress because I have always worked my entire life. And so I didn't want to just stop working because we were moving. So that helped a lot, was kind of course, a lot of planning and preparation. And I thought about, well, I really want to do private practice. And so after a while, I was like, well, you know what? I need to look into licensure. So I didn't look into it right away, but eventually I did. And what was helpful was again, the extrovert in me was like, I need a network. So there was one lady that I knew here from my job, and I was like, hey, can you tell me about licensure? Can you tell me all things St. Louis? And so she was super helpful. So I found that to be one of my main resources, and that was very relieved a lot of stress for me because then we had to worry about the movers and everything that later came. And so there was some stress, but I tried to just plan everything out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, both of you planning things really helps you guys as far as your stress is. Is that how it is for you guys kind of in normal everyday life too? Like as long as you have a plan or structure, things are...
Yeah.
I'm definitely a planner.
So whenever people are like, I like to fly by the seat of my pants, you guys are like,
I like that to a degree. But the thing is, I've at least in my life seen, if you plan somewhat, you have to leave room for flexibility and life adapting, right? But if you plan, even on trips and stuff like that, you don't have to do what you have planned, but you can do more if you think through it before. Or at least I feel like I can do more because then timing works out differently. You know, transportation or whatever it is, even on trips, I feel like I can do more in a given... We only have a certain amount of time a day.
Oh, right, yeah, absolutely.
Both of you said something really important to me that just kind of struck me. For both of you, making sure that you guys could like hit the ground running as far as like even working or having a job, that was really important for you guys. Is it really hard for you guys if there's kind of like some stagnation or you guys aren't really working as much? Is that really difficult for you too?
I find that very difficult because like I said, I've pretty much been working since I was 15. So I started working like in high school just to kind of help my mom. And after that, I mean, I went to college, worked through college, got a job at the age of 21. I was already teaching. So like it was, for me, if I'm not working, it kind of gives me a little bit of anxiety just because I want to be productive. And for me, being productive is having a job and having that stability. So, yeah.
It's important to know about yourself. So you're like, all right, we need to make sure that I, you know, I already have things set in place so that I don't kind of fall into that spot.
Yeah.
Is it like that for you at all, Lauren?
It's very mirrored, actually. Christy and I have very similar upbringings with that. I've had a job since I was 15. Mm-hmm. I worked my way through college, you know, paid my way through college on my own, all this stuff. So master's program too, all of the above. So I think part of it is, yes, I don't know what it's like to not work. And I enjoy working. So like, that's the big part of it is I really, and I knew that I wanted to do psychology and be a psychologist or psychotherapist, you know, since I was in seventh grade. Yeah. So like, I always had a drive for that. But again, I had the plan, but if I veered off, I was like, that's fine too. But everything I learned about psychology, I loved. So I loved working within our field. So it's energizing, also exhausting at times. You know, like it's both in one. I enjoy both. But that's the same thing as I don't like not having a job. I like the independence and the freedom of being able to support myself and all that. So, yeah.
This is a side thing I wasn't even planning on really talking to you two about. But I think that this is really something important. Not only were both of you planning to come over here, not only did both of you guys prepare, but both of you were planning on continuing or launching your own private practices whenever you guys got here. Mm-hmm, so like, that strikes me as like, oh yeah, by the way, not only am I moving, I'm also going to start a business like while I'm doing it.
Well, and I was going to say to Christina, so you, did you start with telemental health before you came?
I did. So I saw a couple of clients with telehealth and promoted that on my Psychology Today and my website because I knew that would help as, you know, as a transition into private practice here.
Yeah. And that's the exact same thing I did. Mm-hmm. So, and I got paneled with insurances before I even moved here, you know, like all the logistical stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and then I started getting calls and all this and I'm like, I can offer you telemental health and I'll be there in September.
Yeah, and for those of you that might not know what telemental health is, that's where you can actually do, I think it's usually video, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if they do, I don't think insurance pays for just phone calls. But you can do a video chat with therapists, which makes it super convenient for people that are really busy, they're really far away, or in really, you know, far out places, or really rural places. Yeah. They might not have access to that kind of help.
Or they're physically unable to make it to an office. It gives way more options for people to get support.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important even for people to know about it because I feel like it's not really well known. But not only that, there's a certain stigma in the field about it, even though there's no research that indicates that telemental health is worse for you or lacking compared to being in. I mean, I know that there's some therapies that you can't really do over it, but it's so interesting because I think that I don't know if I would have even considered doing telemental health or anything like that.
Yeah.
You came from, you're doing it in California?
Yeah. So I'm licensed, I'm actively licensed in California and Missouri. And so what I did is I got everything set up in Missouri while I was still there.
So like whenever people call you from Missouri, it's like, all right, I can do telemental health until I get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think you had the same.
Yeah. So for me, I'm
you
licensed.
You guys do have mirrored stories, don't you?
We do. We really do. It's pretty interesting. For me, I'm licensed in Texas. And so I continued seeing a few clients in Texas. And then I even had some clients who I hadn't seen in a while. And then the parent actually called and was like, hey, my son will not see anybody else. So I was like, well, I have the telemental health option. Yeah. And she's like, great. He would love it because he loves his phone and technology. So it worked out. And that's one of the, I still to this day am seeing that client because of the opportunity of telemental health. So it's been actually a really good asset for me.
Yeah. And again, mirroring again, I have a couple clients that are still active in California through telemental health because they, you know, obviously they always had the option to refer out and I provided them with resources, but they declined.
California's also a big state. So.
Yeah. They declined. But I was a contractor in another private practice agency, like management agency. Mm-hmm. So I had private practice clients out there already. And most of them I just referred out. You know, they preferred to be in person, which is completely understandable. But a couple of them was like, were like, I've been meeting with you for over a year. I'm not going to start over. And I'm, you know, making progress. So,
So it sounds like for your guys' story in this part of your guys' life, it's like, all right, we kind of know what we need. Need to build a social network. Need to make sure that we're working whenever we get here. You guys were able to do that, and then you guys make the shift. Tell me, what was the shift like for you guys? Did all the plans iron out pretty well? Or
so I can start. Professionally, the shift, not a problem, because again, there was a lot of planning that I was able to do. I had control of that part, right? For me, it's sometimes it's about that control, right? And letting go of the things that I cannot control. Mm-hmm. So on the personal side, it was very hard for me because I couldn't control where we lived. I couldn't control the environment, the fact that I had no friends, no family. And so that adjustment was really hard. What I did was networked again. That helped a lot, like meeting other therapists, because I know at my age it's probably a little harder to make friends, just kind of going out and making friends that way, right? Mm-hmm. But professionally, I can make those networks and then develop those friendships. So that was my plan in that aspect. And then of course I made sure that we lived in an area that has a lot going on. And we do have dogs. So my dogs have been my little angels and kind of are just, if we didn't have them here, life would be harder, because I can take them out. I can go on walks. And one of my biggest things is making sure that I provide that like Southern hospitality. Yeah. So like I say hi to everyone on the trail, whether they say hi or not. So I definitely just try to keep a very positive outlook. Kind of try to talk to people if I'm out, you know, by myself on a walk or whatnot. So that's been helpful. Again, I had to learn these things about me, and I had to kind of step out of my comfort zone so that I could
imagine how hard that is.
Yeah.
It provides a little bit of people or try to start those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and every day is a new day, and every day is a new opportunity, right? To kind of make the best of it. And there have been days that are tough, and I can't even sit here and lie. There have been days where I'm just like, you know what? Today I'm not leaving my house. I'm going to stay home because I'm comfortable here and I don't have to face the world. So there have been a couple of those days.
Comfortable there, like you made a home.
Yeah, definitely tried to make a home of it. And that's another huge thing too, is I brought pieces of San Antonio with me. So pictures of my family, put those on the walls, like my photo albums. I make sure like they're pretty accessible. So if there are hard days, like those days I want to stay home, I just take out my photo album from our wedding and like look at that, and that, you know, that was a beautiful time, and I can reminisce on those memories. Yeah. So that's been super helpful as well.
Help strengthen that resolve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You're good managing the self-care. Checking in with yourself.
Yes, that's huge. That was one of the things I wanted to mention on here was, you know, I'm huge on self-care in my practice with my clients as well. So I try to live by that well, not just kind of preach it, but practice it. Mm-hmm. And of course, it does get difficult, but a lot of self-care is what's been but the most helpful.
Having some of those things, like you said, the albums, the pictures, or I know that for me, I just need to kind of stay in. Mm-hmm. Did any of the Facebook groups or anything like that like pan out for good times for you to meet people?
Yeah. So as far as like meeting people, making actual friends, we're still kind of working on that.
You guys haven't really been here very long.
Right. So. We've only been here 3 months. So again, keeping that hope, right? Being very hopeful that we will go out. So like I follow like Grant's Farms, and I follow like just different venues in the St. Louis area. Think about
like, all right, whenever you date, where do you meet people at? Like, all right, now when I'm trying to find friends, where do we meet them at? Like,
right, exactly.
Do we have to go to a bar every time we're trying to meet people? No, there's got to be other places.
There's got
to
be, yeah. We've used a lot of like the, of course, going to Grant's Farms. Mm-hmm. We go to like the City Museum has some like adult nights, and so much fun. So we go out there, and it gives us that chance to like just let go of being an adult, like play on the huge adult-sized playscapes and just have a good time, you know. And I have a really supportive husband, so that's been super helpful too, you know, is knowing that I do have him. And we go, and at those events, we like try to spark conversations with other people. And so, again, kind of getting out of the comfort zone, because back home, we didn't have to do that. We would go out with our group of friends and talk to them the whole time and have fun. But now, you know, we do have to engage a little more than we normally would. So,
have you guys been to any of the dog parks around here?
We actually have a dog park at our apartment.
Oh, really?
So we have met a lot of people there, and like have developed a good network with them. And of course, they're fur babies and our fur babies. So that's been fun. But yeah.
Good deal. So,
yeah.
How about for you, Lauren?
I mean, again, with the self-care, it is very important, I think. There was, of course, stressful moments. I think the more stressful side came for me, actually, because so in the state of California, licensed marriage and family therapist, which is what I am, are very common. We're like everywhere. And I know that's the same like in Minnesota, Texas, numerous other states. In Missouri, yes, there's the state committee and there is the licensure and stuff. Yeah. But other than federal jobs or like vet jobs, like there's not really job options for us out here. I'm finding more and more options, but that was the hard thing too, is because I just wanted to find anything, you know. Like at first I wasn't sure I was even going to do a private practice, you know. I wanted to keep my options open. But yeah, so I think that whole process was a bit more stressful, but thankfully when it comes to logistics of anything, that was pretty smooth with insurances, with the state, all that kind of thing. So that was good. Yeah, there were stressful moments, but I think the stress came more when it was coming down to crunch time. And it was like a week before I was supposed to move, the mover company, not mover company because I moved it myself, but the trunk company called me and they were like, oh yeah, we don't have your truck. Sorry about that. And I was like, so what are you going to do instead? Like, I'll take a bigger truck. It's okay. And they're like, oh, no, I don't know. Good luck. So good luck like that kind of thing.
Like, oh.
That kind of thing was stressful. And I had, you know, my significant other was already out here. So he did, again, like with your husband, he helped me a lot and was very supportive, and he helped figure out the truck thing. So, because I was already, you know, doing all this stuff and I was still working full time and had part time private practice, technically in Missouri, and was saying goodbye to my other private practice. So, and moving across, you know, like getting everything set. And I have two cats. So I was like, obviously there's all the maintenance and saying goodbye to all your friends, because I've been there for 11 years. So it's very bittersweet, because I had a lot of like, family out there, and people that I really invested in. They really invested in me. So it's still hard. It's still sad, but it's also okay. And that's a good thing about technology, is I stay connected to all of them, you know. So even though physically I'm far away, I always knew that I was accessible and they're accessible to me. So it's very comforting in that. But yeah.
You guys both said something really important, I think, is that for both of you guys were able to kind of lean into your significant others during this time. And I think that's such a big deal, right? Because I think that sometimes when people, like, the pressure's on and they really get stressed, like, that's kind of like what we're supposed to do. But sometimes we're like, I'm going to pull away and shrink away from everything.
Yeah.
The fact that you guys are able to do that says a lot about your guys' relationship. But I think there's another thing that you guys are talking about that is something else that I just kind of want to hit on, is it seems like there's no move that can ever go like completely smooth.
But, I have not heard one.
But for you guys, having such a mind as towards to what can I do to take care of myself, to make sure I'm okay. So what I'm wondering, like, if I'm someone that's listening to this and they're like, they keep on saying this self-care thing, like, how would I figure out what I can do to make sure I'm taking care of myself? So that's kind of the question I like to put towards you guys, is what process, or what did you guys do that kind of helped you guys know, all right, this is going to be helpful for me whenever times are tough?
And I think that's really the big core of it. And what I help a lot of my clients with is that self-awareness piece, where it's just trying to figure it out and just trying to figure out what works when. Because that's the other thing too. You know, you could have a list of 100 things that have that could be self-care or positive coping skills, mm-hmm. but you know, today 99 don't work, you know, like they're yeah. just not effective. So that's why the more tools you have in your toolkit, the better, you know. So it's always adding up, okay, if this worked one time in the past, it could work in the future. So I try to just have as many options as possible. And we actually, Christine and I were talking a little earlier, like we both like baking, we both like cooking. Mm-hmm. And so it's also reframing that, okay, well, with this transition and with accruing, you know, and getting everything in order, we also have a little bit more time for that self-care with, I can become a better cook or a better baker and just enjoy that and mm-hmm. not have this expectation of, I think it's also a boundary with the job, because with the private practice too, you could never turn it off. Yeah. If you really don't, you know, like any small business, you could really not. And so I think having boundaries with that and knowing where your burnout is, but a lot of that takes trial and error too, is like observing, okay, I need to be able to give myself a day off at least mm-hmm. once a week.
How did you find out where your boundary or where your cutoff is?
I think a lot of it's trial and error. Yeah. But the thing is, I'm also like paying attention. And so I've had I've been in the workforce for almost 20 years now, you know, so I've had a lot of time to review past behavior or review like different situations and what causes my burnout and what helps. I think part of it too is being patient with yourself, giving yourself permission to mm-hmm. take the day off, giving yourself permission to sit and watch a movie all day and then go on a walk, you know, and not worry, like are you living to work or are you working to live? Yeah. Kind of set up, you yeah. know.
I want to do a quick definition really quick, right? We're hearing the word burnout. And for those of you that may not know, burnout is it's a term that's used in a lot of different things. Usually how us counselors or therapists think of it is that whenever you kind of get so exhausted emotionally and a lot of times physically, but usually it's more of like an emotional exhaustion that leads to physical exhaustion, that you really aren't deriving pleasure from anything and you really don't have motivation to do anything. Mm-hmm. It's a really scary place. I think that even whenever I talk about it right now, I just like imagine like a sand trap, right? Or like just a dark pit that kind of keeps dragging you in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just like exhausting. There's just a lack yeah. of motivation.
So like making sure that when you feel yourself heading towards that, it's like, okay, I need to take one of these tools out of my tool belt to be able to help. Make sure that I don't keep on going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How about for you, Christina? What is it that you've done that, like whether or not it's just kind of like self-work or like any type of realization where you're like, okay, I know that looking at these pictures of my family helps, or I know that, you know, baking or whatever it is helps. Like, how are you able to notice that? Or what are some things that maybe people that are listening to this would be like, oh, wow, that may help me too.
Yeah. For me, it's always taking a step back, right? So we get bogged down with the day-to-day life. And for us, it was the move and getting settled in. So mm-hmm. it was really taking a step back, allowing myself and giving myself that permission, as Lauren spoke of earlier, and saying it's okay to take these breaks, right? So one of the things I really had to analyze was, of course, things that worked for me in the mm-hmm. past that I know have worked. And then, of course, any negative behaviors, things that have not worked for me, I kind of tried not to go back there again, and then implementing those things. So kind of giving myself a baseline of this worked, and now how can I enhance that?
How far back do you go?
I would say,
like when I was a kid, I really liked Suckers. Should I still consider that option on the table?
Well, yeah, it's going to make you feel better.
Yeah, if it makes you feel better. And again, it goes back to some of that trial and error, right? Yeah. So for me, I mean, I've been in the counseling field for about 10 years now. So mm-hmm. I kind of try to go back to the beginning of that, because I have experienced burnout and mm-hmm. I know what got me there and I know what to do now to prevent ever getting there again, right? And so I would say you can go as far back as you feel necessary in order to just keep finding those things that work for you. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just a lot of like analyzing the self, that self-awareness, and just kind of building on what I already had in my toolbox and adding to it And I continue to add to that every day. I mean, there are some things that I've done now that I maybe had never done before, right? Like going, like one of my things was I always did running and walking in groups. And now I'm doing a lot more of that by myself. And I'm figuring out what works and what doesn't work with that.
Like, do I like doing this on my own? Or right. is it really the group thing? Or
yeah, is it more the social? And so it's just right now it's a lot of trial and error. But being kind to yourself, knowing that there are going to be some days that are harder. And there are going to be some days that where you feel like you have everything together and you can just conquer the world. So that's important, too, to give yourself those permissions.
Now, this is just something I'm thinking of just off the fly. I'm wondering if you guys can share with me some of the tools in your guys' toolbox. I know that I'm sitting here while I'm listening to you guys. I'm like, what really works for me? And I know that, like, for me, whenever I'm in a place where, like, I'm bored or stressed or anything, I just like sitting outside in the sunshine. Whatever it is about it, I just like it. Even if it's just a little bit of sunshine touching my body, and I just focus on that, and I really like that. And whatever's going on, that I know that that calms me. Or gardening, or little house projects, I know that's something that's really helpful for me. Whenever I'm needing to kind of like put that reset button or anything, what are some other tools that you guys have in your toolboxes?
Well, something I want to, and it's kind of playing off of what Christina said, is I think, and the point of maybe what you said, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is taking the time to think about it. Taking the time to, because I think a lot of people do just keep moving, or it's scary to slow down and actually be like, okay, I need to analyze this for a minute.
What
and
do
see.
People say is that if I slow down, then it'll all catch up.
So I think that's a big self-care piece too, is taking the time. And I mean, that's one of the benefits of therapy, is you have a safe space with somebody. Even if you don't know where to start, you have a safe space to have somebody who can help you start and help guide you through that. So, I mean, as we all know, we're therapists, we like it. But for my own self-care, I mean, I really like photography. Early on, I made the boundary that it's a hobby, it's not a career. So I really keep that boundary. I like photography, I like nature, I like hikes, I like animals. So, you know, I definitely surround myself with those things. Another self-care boundary that I do that I think logistically is the most helpful is I don't have notifications activated for any of my stuff on my phone. And so I have to make the conscious decision to check it no matter what it is. And that includes email, if there's any sort of social media, if there's this or that. And I mean, I do check it regularly, especially with the work stuff, but it's me making the choice and not being distracted by it constantly.
I just read something the other day. Whenever someone gets interrupted in their thought or in their process, it takes them about a 20 something minutes to half an hour to get back on task.
Oh, I believe that.
Can you believe that?
Like, we could be sitting here talking about this, and then I get a call or a text message, and I won't look at it. Then it's like, oh crap, what is it that we were talking about? Like, it takes like longer to like get back in the flow of things. And
for sure.
Absolutely. I can see that happening.
It prevents us from being fully present.
So I think that's really important. That's something that you noticed about yourself and you took action for. Turning off the notifications. Anything in your toolbox that you kind of noticed that, like, hey, this works pretty good. And, you know, it's maybe even something you might not have thought of.
For me, very similar to Lauren, notifications are, for me, very minimal. So there are a couple of things that I do still get notifications for, one of them being text messages. But like email, Facebook, all social media, I have deactivated all my notifications on that. I even so much as went to deleting the actual apps. So if I'm going into like Facebook, I have to actually go in through the website. And so that's helped a lot, because then I'm not
waste time doing that.
Yeah, I'm not wasting time, or I'm not.
I made a longer password too. So
right. Yeah, so some of that has helped. Of course, for me, I do love like being outside. And so I'm trying to take advantage of the nice weather, taking my dogs on long walks. So one thing that I found very helpful is I won't wear my smartwatch, because that was kind of stressing me out with the number of steps and all that. So I stopped wearing that. But what I do is I set my stopwatch, and I say, okay, minimum walk today with my dogs, 35 minutes. And so we go, come back, And oftentimes I notice that it'll exceed that because I'm not stressing myself out so much with I have to get a certain amount of steps or a certain amount of miles. It's just, you know what, 35 minutes. The other day I was like, you know what, we'll up that 50-minute walk today. And we did that, and it was so much fun. We discovered different parts of Forest Park that we hadn't been to, and my dogs were happy, which made me happy. So it's just kind of using technology to your advantage as opposed to like your disadvantage, right? Because we can be overly connected.
That's so important. So like I'm sitting here wearing my Fitbit today, and I don't worry about this as much as other people, but I know some people are like, I have to get my 10,000 steps today, right? So like you're saying, like, oh, just like adds that extra layer of worry, or I think the extra layer of guilt and shame. Oh, I should have done this. It's kind of like that's the same way I feel it is sometimes whenever, I don't know if you guys have ever done this. Like I do this, I go through spurts of this where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go on a diet, or I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to try to cut this out. So let me track the food that I'm eating. And then like every time I'm doing that, I'm just like, oh gosh, this is awful. Like then you then you kind of like sit there and notice, you're like, I really beat myself up a lot over this. Like like I'm actually a lot happier whenever I don't do that. But then some people, like, they're able to do that. Like I know my wife, she can track her food, and that makes her feel better about everything.
Oh, that's exactly what I was gonna say. So like even, and I think that's part of it too, is the self-care is so individualized, and you have to check in, because like Christina felt pressured when there's steps. I love my steps. It motivates me. Yeah. And I have a Fitbit, and I track everything I eat.
Lauren's
I
saying she walks around this office.
But
10,000 steps.
I do try to like do floors. Sometimes I will like to, if I need to get energy a little bit, or if I kind of just want to, you know, get some motivation or movement, I will do floors and stuff like that, which are tracked too. So I do, but I like doing that, and I like tracking it, and I like keeping, because, so I started, I've done Fitbits here and there, but I started my current one in February, and I've gotten over 10,000 steps every day since then, because it's like a real big motivator for me. But I thrive off that, but not everyone does.
You see, and what I want to add something here about self-care too, especially now knowing with the transition. Self-care for me in San Antonio looked very different than it does in St. Louis. So in San Antonio, I was running like marathons, half marathons, and, you know, staying really active with my running group. And I had this huge plan when I moved to St. Louis, like I'm going to still run, and I'm going to be in running groups, and I'm going to do that same thing. But I found it wasn't working because our schedule was different. And of course, part of it was just the entire move. So I was getting very bogged down with, oh my God, I'm not running my 3 to 5 miles a day, or not a day, but like every other day, the way I was doing back home. Yeah. And so my smartwatch, that's when it started becoming like more of a burden for me, as opposed to a benefit. So
it's reminding you about
what I'm not doing and making me feel guilty. And so I just had to say, you know what, I'm not wearing my smartwatch anymore. Like, that has to go for now. And when I get back into my running, which is still a plan of mine, then I'll get back to wearing it. So being very aware and reminding yourself that my self-care in one place may not look the same when I move. Because with transitions and change, we just don't know what might come up, and we don't know, you know, where the comfort level is going to be. And so being kind to yourself again is super important, saying, you know what, I'm still a runner. I'm just not running as much right now because of the circumstance, and I'll get back to it when I can.
You gave yourself time to figure that out. Like, you're still figuring that out, and you're you're being patient with yourself. And I think that's the key thing too, is a lot of people feel like if it's, you know, internal pressure, social pressure, you know, society pressure. Well, I need to have things figured out. Or I need to do this or that. And it's like, no, you're figuring it out as you go. And it's being patient with yourself, because I think that's the amazing point is as things change in life, even if it's not a move, your self-care changes. If it's development or...
Totally beat me to that question too. I was going to ask you if anything had changed. Has that been the case for you? Is anything that you're like, well, this really worked in California, but like me being here, it doesn't really work as much for me.
Well, so some of it's just, it's not physically here. Like I would surf and I can't surf the Mississippi, but
you certainly try.
So stuff like that. But then you adapt. So now we're, you know, I'm doing paddleboarding mm-hmm. and stuff like that because there's so many lakes around here. So it's still getting out there. But now we're gonna hit winter, so that's gonna prevent certain things too. So I think it's also about
just a quitter. You don't want to go out there in the winter.
I do have a really good wetsuit. That's meant for like British Columbia, but no. Yeah. So that's the thing too, is being aware of sometimes like physically, you just can't do the same things anymore. Mm-hmm. And if it's because of a move or because of a ailment or, you know, something medical, you know, that can be really trying, and being able to kind of reframe it or refocus or see what other options there are that still match your personality or your interests or your drive. I think that's key. And it definitely, yeah, some of the stuff like has changed for me mm-hmm. too, and I had to adapt.
I get that. I was thinking of, I hadn't moved or haven't moved, but the thing that's changed for me is I really liked gardening a couple of years ago. And this year, my son was born. And every time I look out that garden, I was like, I hate this thing because now I got to go out there and pick weeds. I got to go out there and pick this stuff. Do I even want those tomatoes? Like, goodness.
Yeah.
So I think that you're right. During different life transitions or over time, mm-hmm. what we need to do to take care of ourselves changes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful thing because it becomes a journey for mm-hmm. us. We're constantly figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a growth process. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think that's going to happen for the rest of our lives, and being open to that is really integral.
And it sounds like you guys are still working on that. Like, all right, what, you know, this has been a big move. You guys have only been here for, you know, several months and working on.
I've just been here a month.
Oh, just a month. So like still trying to figure out like, okay, what is it that I still need to do to take care of myself? And to hear you guys talking about like how much it's part of your mind. And I think that there can be people here that are, maybe you've even been here for years and they're still in that place where they're trying to figure it out, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And or at least that's what I'm hearing you guys say, like, that's okay. You'll figure it out. Just remember some of the things that helped before. And, you know, if you try it now, it doesn't help. That's all right. Adjust it and mm-hmm. try something else and be open to it.
Yeah. Well, and I think if a lot of the things or people feel like, okay, well, all the stuff that I did before isn't really working anymore, you know, then it's like, okay, how can I expand it? And if it's talking to other people, what works for them? If it's going and trying new things, I know we mentioned Meetup before, but there's tons of options like on there too, if you don't want to do it alone, or if it's just kind of, you could explore different hobbies or activities, or volunteerism, you know, all that. And if it doesn't work, okay, you tried.
Yeah.
Like, let's try something new then, you know, there's a plethora of activities to do on this, in this world. So thankfully.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. So I want to thank both of you guys for joining me here today and talking with me about your guys' transition. And I think it's so helpful for maybe even some of us that aren't in a transition of moving from place to place, to even keep in our mind that the different things that work for us to take care of ourselves. Cause like I said, even as I'm listening to you guys, how I would have taken care of myself in the move would have been different. And that's okay, because I'm different than both of you. Mm-hmm. And even though you guys are very similar, how you guys approached it is also different.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So I want to thank you guys for sharing that piece of your guys' life with us. And I hope this is helpful to some of you, that are listening to this. And, thank you for joining us for this episode, and maybe we'll get the chance to talk with both of you guys a little bit. I think we were talking outside the episode, and we didn't really even talk a lot about your guys' areas of expertise in counseling, because I think that might be helpful for people to know about too. So thank you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.